Welcome back, guys, to week three of the Big Sky Podcast Network Power Rankings presented by Tubbs the Club, meeting sponsored by Snake River Stampede Canadian Whiskey. I'm your host, Brian Marceau. To my left, your right, is the infamous Duster from Tubbs the Club episodes, if you are a live viewer. But hey, we're going to jump in a little special episode today. One, yeah, I'm recording super early. I always have to preface this before we really dive into the show. The Power Rankings episode, it takes place when I can make it fit. And today it's midday. Typically it's super late at night. But look, this show is going to bounce around time to time. That's just how it works. The end. What's special about this week is, yes, I'm going to go over the typical results and, hey, our power poll done by Big Sky Podcast Network contributors, Big Sky media figures, and Big Sky beat reporters, as well as just some people we know who follow the conference pretty dang closely. The ranking is just the sum and the mean scores of all the individual votes. We go through the schools 12 through 1, starting at the bottom, spend less time on the bottom schools because, of course, that's the case. But this week, out of conference season is over. We're 3 weeks into the season. So in addition to the rankings, we're going to go over out of conference grades as a way to kind of hang this episode. And I hate to say this to my friends in Greeley, but for the third week in a row, starting at the bottom, Northern Colorado just with a stranglehold on the 12th spot. So this week, Northern Colorado, they lose a game they should. You know, Northern Colorado travels to Pullman, loses to FBS number 23 Washington State 64-21. Game was not close whatsoever, as you could expect, because thus far Northern Colorado has not played in a single close game. The halftime score was 43-7. On the bright side for the Bears, in the first two out of conference games combined, Northern Colorado put up 19 total points and the Bears finished with 21. So that's 40 points in 12 quarters of out-of-conference football play. So congrats, Northern Colorado, sprinting through their box score. Jacob Sermon, 16-24 for 171 yards and two touchdowns. Obviously, they were too late touchdowns. Hank Gibbs saw some quarterback time too, 2-6 for 37 yards, no scores. David Afari led Northern Colorado on the ground, 17 rushes for 116 yards. Easily Afari's best outing. Again, a lot of garbage time there when the game is 43-7 at the half. But hey, Northern Colorado's got to take what they can. Touchdown catches for Darius Stewart and Jamari Robinson. And hitting the overall box score, look, it was a bloodbath. Northern Colorado gave up 718 total yards. Takeaway for them is they put up 366, which is one of the better offensive outing for the Bears so far. So out of conference grade for Northern Colorado. I mean, look, you can't go with any grade other than an F for Northern Colorado. They sit at 0-3, 0-2 in FCS games. What I'm most concerned about if I'm a Northern Colorado fan is in those two FCS games. I'm just going to completely ignore the Washington State game because why not? A good Pac-12 team against a terrible Big Sky team. We learned nothing. But Northern Colorado lost their first two games, first at Abilene Christian, 31-11. That's WAC, United Athletic Conference, whatever you want to call it, Abilene Christian. And then at Southland, best team in the Southland, Incarnate Word, 42-7. So in two FCS games, that's being outscored 73-18. So I don't know what grade you would give other than an F for Northern Colorado. The biggest concern is I don't know what the weapon is Northern Colorado has against FCS teams after these first three weeks. That's really what I'm concerned about. Because look, they against the FCS teams, they couldn't score and they couldn't stop opponents. Well, what the hell else are you supposed to do? So no, Northern Colorado, probably the easiest team to grade in the entire conference. They have an F. We're moving on. Number 11, Northern Arizona. And this, I feel like we should be a little bit sad for what Northern Arizona is. They currently, the Lumberjacks sit exactly where, again, they're 0-3. So don't be shocked when you hear a not so great grade come in a few seconds. But Northern Arizona, hosting Utah Tech. Utah Tech out of the WAC, most recently lost to Montana by around 40. And the Grizz are not exactly lighting the world on fire offensively. And final score was 50-36 Utah Tech, but Northern Arizona trailed it at the half 37-7. This game was kind of saved in terms of just box score respectability, if you do not pay attention to the game whatsoever, by Northern Arizona putting up 21 points in the fourth quarter when, when the fourth quarter kicked off, it was 47-15 Utah Tech. So complete garbage time bailouts, at least for the box score for Northern Arizona. Northern Arizona, Adam DeMonte took the most snaps at quarterback, went 22-31 for 247 yards, two touchdowns, two picks. Kai Milner, who had been the starter, only took 9 total pass attempts, 31 yards, and a pick. Devon Starling led Northern Arizona on the ground, 15 rushes for 111 yards and a touchdown. So, hey, maybe that's what you hang your hat on. I don't know if Kai Milner went down, and that's why the dude only took 9 total passes under center, but whatever. This is not a Northern Arizona show. If you want a deep dive in Northern Arizona ins and outs, feel free to go elsewhere on the game. Now here is what I just think is murderous for Northern Arizona. Now, I mean, look, part of this is that Northern Arizona turned the ball over 5 times against Utah Tech, but Utah Tech was outgained by 50 yards, 446 for NAU, 390 for Utah Tech. But when you turn the ball over 5 times, that's 2 lost fumbles and 3 picks thrown. Well, often teams don't have to gain too many yards. So Northern Arizona, to end the out-of-conference grade suspense for the Wildcats, or not the Wildcats, the Lumberjacks. I feel misnaming them is eminently appropriate relative to who Northern Arizona's been. Yeah, again, like the brain dead. Northern Arizona gets an F for their out-of-conference schedule, sitting at 0-3. Northern Arizona is 0-2 in FCS games against at North Dakota from Missouri Valley, and then just covered Utah Tech. Neither of those games were that close. Both, even with garbage time bailouts, were 2 touchdown losses for the Wildcats, and NAU also kind of, they outscored North Dakota 13-7 in the fourth quarter that second week too. So again, 2 FCS games that were not particularly close for Northern Arizona in their out of conference play. Yeah, that's an F. The team looks like they're floundering. Again, Northern Arizona, to me, they're a little more of a sad story because they've got the resources to be better. This isn't Northern Colorado, where Ed Lamb is in year one and inherited a dumpster fire. Chris Ball has been there for almost half a decade, and this is where the team is. So we're done talking about Northern Arizona. Grades an F. So far, grades are, we don't give participation points for our out-of-conference grading. You either did well or you did not. There's a little bit of flex just based off of expectations and style points. Moving on. Number 10, my man, McLean Westbrook. Just got to tell you, your Idaho State Bengals coming in at number 10. The good news for you, McLean, is that means Idaho State is top 10 in the Big Sky. So pat yourself on the back. Idaho State hosted Northern Iowa. Northern Iowa fresh off losing 34-17 to Weber State a week ago. And, well, it was not a doubling up for UNI. Well, let me phrase that. There was a doubling up, but it was not in favor of Idaho State. So Northern Iowa wins 41-17. And I watched a bit of this game. I am not as down on Idaho State as the last two teams we talked about, because at least Cody Hawkins has something that's at times fun to watch. Idaho State spreads the ball around. They play at a very fast pace. Now, downside is if you can't defend very well, if you have any sort of three and outs, then what you're sprinting to is a gigantic deficit. But at least Idaho State can be kind of fun. Taylor Cash in the comments section talk about NAU, but they're on the right track. Hashtag right track. If you're a Tubbs listener, you know that Zach Claus reference when you see it. But the Idaho State game, it got ugly relatively quick because Idaho State just does not have the talent defensively to hold virtually anyone. It was 27-3 at the half, finished 41-17. But again, no suspense when we're talking about a 27-3 score at the half, hitting the box score for Idaho State. Jordan Cook started through again. Jordan Cook is clearly the starter at quarterback, but Hunter Hayes is getting his reps in. Idaho State only threw it 44 times this week, which seems like a lower number relative to earlier in the out of conference play. Jordan Cook as starter goes 23-35 for 249 yards, no touchdowns, one pick. Hunter Hayes, when he came in, 7 of 9. Now Hunter Hayes played when the final score was the end result was not in doubt. So put that asterisk next to Hayes' stats. He goes 7 of 9 for 69 yards and one touchdown. Did throw a very long touchdown that looked was a nice looking play, but you know, likely against second stringers late in the fourth quarter. On the ground, now this is always the question that we look at with Idaho State: how many times are they going to rush the ball? Minus quarterback rushes, which would take out 8 of those between Hunter Hayes and Jordan Cook. Idaho State rushed 9 total times, and I'm not going to do the math on that, but the box score was 17 rushes for 28 yards. Take out 9 of those rushes and 8 of those yards. Okay, so 9 rushes for 20 yards. That was it. One rushing touchdown from Aiden Taylor. So look, you can read the box score and be pretty clear on what Idaho State does. They spread the field, short passes replace rushes, and honestly, I mean, look, it's not precisely air raid, but it's when it's clicking, Idaho State, I honestly do think is kind of fun to watch. But look, they're going to be towards the bottom of the Big Sky for the entire season, no question. Out of conference grade for Idaho State, I might be feeling a bit generous with this. I'm going to go F+. I can't quite go to the D-, but I'm okay saying Idaho State gets an F+. Why they get an F+? One, Idaho State at least kept it competitive in week one at San Diego State. Getting murdered by Utah State in week two when Idaho State gave up 44 points in the second quarter is going to be an all-time Big Sky stat to talk about. And I honestly should probably need to just stick with an F for Idaho State because I'm still saying F+ because they're at least kind of fun to watch at times. But we didn't really learn a ton other than Idaho State's not very good based off of Idaho State playing 2 FBS out of conference games they lost. And then Northern Iowa is not, they're a solid Big Sky team. I don't think they're playoff caliber, but they're not atrocious, and they murdered the Bengals. So there's not that many moral victories, I think, to take out of this, especially considering the best outing for Idaho State was week one. So there is no internal narrative about week by week improvement for Idaho State, but I'm going to say F+. Because at least Idaho State was kind of fun. Moving on to number 9. And look, there's a cliff once we get out of these next couple teams. Taylor Cash in the comment section, 6-5 Northern Iowa. That's exactly it. Idaho State gets murdered by a team that is destined to finish 6-5 and then be a 3 seed in the playoffs. So take with that what you will. Number 9, Cal Poly. Cal Poly had the dumpster fire scare of the week. The Mustangs righted their ship, and it's important that the Mustangs righted their ship the way they did, because I will complain extensively on this show about Big Sky teams scheduling sub D1 games. I will really complain about sub D2 games, and Cal Poly scheduled a sub D2 game against Lincoln from California. No, I'm not going to spend time going over whatever the hell it is Lincoln plays in, but Lincoln is essentially the Bible college version of a out of conference game for Big Sky football teams. And this was a game that Lincoln led in the second quarter. This again at Cal Poly, 20-7. Now Cal Poly pulled it together and scored 34 points in the second and third quarters combined. It was 0-0 in the final quarter. So it looked 41-20 final score. So Cal Poly does have a three touchdown win. So there was some space, but Lincoln's the kind of team that Cal Poly, if Cal Poly's okay, should have beaten by 40-ish. And certainly this game should not have felt like it was in doubt partway through the second quarter. Sam Heward, box score wise, strong outing, which he absolutely should have a strong outing against a terrible team like Lincoln, who there's probably about 1500 undergraduates at Lincoln. So again, that's our subtext for this game. That's why no one at Cal Poly should be stoked about this outcome. Sam Heward goes 28 of 39 for 325 yards and 6 touchdowns. Again, box score means absolutely nothing against Lincoln, but from what I watched, Heward, I think, is the most physically talented, just in terms of arm talent, passer in the Big Sky, but I do not think he's going to be the best quarterback on the season. And Cal Poly, they just don't run the ball. It's similar to Idaho State, but slightly different against Lincoln. And in the fourth quarter, Cal Poly did milk the clock. This was a 0-0 fourth quarter. Cal Poly rushed a total of 18 times for 46 yards against Lincoln. So if Cal Poly cannot run against Lincoln to the tune of better than 2.6 yards, they will be able to run against exactly zero Big Sky Conference teams on the season. Now, grading Cal Poly out of conference, this is a little tougher than the other grading the previous teams because Cal Poly sits at 2-1. I don't think you should count their 2-1. They're 1-1 in D1 games, 1-0 in FCS games, although they did beat Pioneer League, which is to say non-scholarship San Diego. So the overall grade I'm going to give Cal Poly for out-of-conference play is they get the big D-. Cal Poly did pick up an FCS win. That's what it was a very weak FCS win overall. We'll hit the comment section in a moment. But we have no upward trajectory for Cal Poly because you could not say the Mustangs looked better in week 3 than they did in week 1, where Cal Poly truly they had to come from behind to beat Lincoln. That is close to as bad as it gets in the out-of-conference. But the Mustangs did pick up a win, and you can see there's a clear offensive identity for this team. They're not going to be able to stop anyone. So truly, Idaho State and Cal Poly are more or less cousins where I just love that you could combine the entire rosters of Cal Poly and Idaho State and you'd still only have half a football team because neither team's going to be able to stop anyone. But Cal Poly and Idaho State, both of them, I think, are at least going to have a game or two in conference where it's high scoring and the results in doubt against a team that's better than you thought. Hit in the comment section. Taylor Cash, what's Lincoln's athletic governing body? That's for someone else to do when I'm not recording live, Taylor, but a completely fair question. And I don't know. You'd think with how often we see Lincoln playing teams like Portland State or Cal Poly, we'd have this one figured out, but we'll figure it out someday. Or someone who is not me will figure it out and tell me. Captain58, damn, missed the dumpster fire section. Oh, Captain, we're not yet out of the dumpster fire section, man, but you can always listen later. Martin Heemstra, with just a bunch of emojis, so keep it up, Martin. I can't read those precisely. McLean Westbrook, wouldn't be surprised to see Hayes as starter for Northern Colorado, but Hawkins seems to really like Cook based on the first three games. Shifting back to Idaho State for 1 second, just because comment section, no, McLean, you're right. Hunter Hayes has been more productive with the asterisk. He's played a lot of second half. He's played against a lot of second stringers. So hold that as well. But you are right. It's clear that Cody Hawkins really wants to give Jordan Cook some time and see if he can develop. Martin Heemstra, they're not in any classification talking about Lincoln. I have given way too much time to Lincoln, guys. Moving on from number 9, we have the final dumpster fire team, Captain. So you did make it in time. Top 5, Portland State sits at number 8. I am going to sprint through Portland State's week because Portland State, they do this every year. They schedule 2 bye games where Portland State gets murdered against a good FBS team. Then they schedule a sub D2 team to beat up on, and we know nothing about Portland State. Well, that's exactly what happened this out of conference. Portland State sitting at 1. They are sitting at 1-2, just beat North American, wherever they're from, 91-0. I'm not even going to acknowledge the box score of this. Portland State played a teeny school in God knows what classification, and they put up 91 points. Maybe this makes them feel better about losing 81-7 at Oregon. I don't care. I am not going to go over stats for this breakdown. I'm just going to go to the out-of-conference grade, and Portland State gets a resounding F because we learned absolutely nothing about Portland State. There's no trajectory for us to follow truly week by week. Portland State is just what they appear to have to be year in and year out, which is they suck. But if we had a tournament of the worst teams in the Big Sky, Portland State sometimes would win. Hit in the comment section, because it's better than talking about Portland State with nothing worthwhile to cover. Martin's been the MVP in this section, but Martin describes Lincoln and North American as ass. Taylor Cash and Portland scored again. Martin Heemstra, North American is in the NAIA. So thank you. Portland State beats an NAIA team 91-0 and a not that good NAIA team. Okay, that's why we learned nothing. Bummer ISU doesn't play at Cal Poly this year, says Captain 58. That has 69-66-4-OT written all over it. And we'd all be game for a nice score like that, dude. Taylor Cash, Portland State should just go D2, seconded. Portland State, I just don't think Portland State is ever going to commit what they need to be a reasonable FCS team. I think we've already seen the ceiling a few years ago, the 1 year Portland State made the playoffs, Bruce Barnum's first year. And look, they don't even have a stadium in their town. They share it with a high school. They have no path forward to even having their own stadium. Portland State doesn't exactly have its finger on the pulse of the city of Portland anyway. Yeah, we're moving on. Before we move on, got to hear from about show sponsor Snake River Stampede Canadian Whiskey. And look, tailgating is coming up for Vandals immediately, coming this Saturday. If you've not tried Snake River Stampede Canadian Whiskey, either the Snake River Stampede or Snake River 1915 Small Batch Edition, give them both a shot, or at least give one of them a shot. Snake River Stampede is one of the best buys in Idaho liquor stores at $25.95 a fifth for one of the top two Canadian whiskeys you can buy. Now, the top Canadian whiskey in Idaho liquor stores you're going to get is Snake River 1915 Small Batch Edition. Both the Stampede and the 1915 have double barrel finishes. Both start in first fill bourbon barrels. The Stampede finishes in Oloroso sherry casks. The 1915 Small Batch finishes in ex-Canadian whiskey casks, but it's also aged a couple more years relative to relative to Stampede. Jason Mayer in the comment section, Mayer Tailgate, will have SRS on hand this Saturday. Well, hey, Jason, I know for a fact you left Snake River because I was going to donate a bottle of it to you guys just to make sure it's there. So you guys are covered no matter what. Captain 58 in the comment section, moving on from Snake River guys, but hey, give them a shot, especially tailgating. Real bummer. Portland should have a serious football team in town. Captain is right, and they don't, and they're not going to. Number seven. This is where it gets interesting. Montana comes in at number seven. And if I were to give an award for underwhelmer of the week, honestly, it's Montana. The Grizz, they sit at 3-0, but certainly not confident 3-0 is where Montana sits. The Grizz struggled, absolutely struggled hosting Ferris State. Now, Ferris State, they're the defending Division II national champion. As FCS Fans Nation contributor Kyler Neal repeats, and he's correct to repeat this, good D2 teams offer more scholarships than Pioneer League teams. So even though those D2 games don't count for the playoffs, there are certainly some D2 teams that play FCS teams that are better than Pioneer League teams. And Ferris State, for sure, is one of those. This game was opposite of some of the games we've talked about. This game was essentially in doubt, wire to wire. Final score, 17-10. Montana narrowly edges. But the Grizz trailed 10-3 at halftime. Then they picked up their 17-10 edge in the third, and it was a shutout in the fourth quarter. Box score wise, Montana just doesn't know what they're doing offensively, or they do know what they're doing offensively, and the Grizz are just okay being a dumpster fire. Sam Vidlak started for Montana, went 9-15 for 105 yards, no touchdowns, one pick. A just unending complaint Grizz fans have is that the Grizz have a relatively talented receiver room and just no guys get enough reps. The Grizz top receiver, Junior Bergen, 3 catches for 52 yards, no touchdowns. But again, look, this is analogous to, hey, let's talk about Idaho for 1 second. Let's pretend Hayden Hatton didn't exist and Idaho's top receiver was Jermaine Jackson and Idaho just decided, hey, we want to not throw it to this dude. That's what Montana regularly does with Junior Bergen. He's one of the most electric dudes in the Big Sky. He just can't get any touches. On the ground, Grizz are led by freshman Eli Gilman, 19 rushes for 78 yards and one touchdown. Nick Osmo contributed 10 rushes for 16 yards and a touchdown. Overall, and I just have to hit the team stats. When I said the Grizz are a dumpster fire offensively, against a Division II team, Montana picked up 189 total yards. We have a word for this, and that word is embarrassment. I don't think I need to go any further. The Grizz were outgained by a D2 team by virtually 100 yards. Look, the Grizz had a great defensive outing, gave up 285 total yards. You guys already know the D2 asterisk. But just as a reference point, if a Big Sky Conference team gave up an average of 285 yards per game defensively, they'd be considered nationally elite. The Grizz did that this game and were almost outgained by 100 yards. This is nothing short of embarrassing. Grizz were even turnover wise, 1-1 with the Vidlak pick. And I am done. I'm officially done on this show talking about the subtext of the Montana fan base. At this point, the Grizz look like their ceiling is fringe playoff. This Grizz team, depending on schedule, absolutely could finish 500 or slightly below in Big Sky play if they're going to do this. Because, hey, we're talking about the Grizz at number 7. Obviously, that means there's 6 teams above them. The 5 teams below Montana right now are all garbage. It's a cliff between number 7 Montana and number 8 Portland State. But offensively, this is an abomination. The question for Montana heading into this year is, when Bobby Houck rearranged the deck chairs by changing coaching assignments for Montana's both a new offensive coordinator and a new defensive coordinator. The big change offensively is Brent Peace moving from assistant head coach and wide receivers coach to offensive coordinator. Question was, hey, will that mean anything for Montana? And 3 weeks in, no, it doesn't. Montana just scored 17 points against the D2 team. So no. Overall, out of conference grade for Montana, it is going to be higher than the others because Montana sits at 3-0, 2-0 in playoff type game, in FCS games account for the playoffs. I am going to give Montana a C- built solely off the back of the 2 D1 wins. So that does give them a lot of margin for error for the playoffs, which the Grizz look like they're going to need if they're going to barely be able to, they're not even going to be able to eclipse 200 yards against Ferris State. Let me hit the comment section real quick. We have a little bit of energy on this Grizz side. So we've got Jason Mayer saying, go Eags, which we'll get to the Eags in a moment. Captain 58, FTG, Jason Mayer, FTG, which I'm pretty sure all our listeners know that. Let's just say the TG stands for the Grizz, and the first letter sounds for something that rhymes with fuck. Taylor Cash, shout out to the offensive targeting by a lineman. Why does this only happen in Missoula? Great question, man. Great question, Taylor. Yeah, another offensive targeting penalty in Missoula. There's a famous old one for you're, of course, making reference to the other old one when Case Cookus from Northern Arizona was ejected for targeting. That was a while ago. And Martin Heemstra and that not catch call. Holy shit, they were bad. Refs were rough. Now Martin's talking about a catch that Junior Bergen made, had about 2 steps on that catch and then it was ruled incomplete. But moving back to the Grizz as a whole, there's certainly talent on Montana, but the thing I think the Grizz need to be concerned about is I don't think they're quite as physically imposing defensively as they have been in recent years. And Bobby Houck is in year 5 of his second stint in Montana. And I think the trajectory is starting to go slightly down. They're not a bad football team, of course, and Bobby Houck is not a bad football coach. But I think his approach in modern football is fundamentally flawed. And what I'd point to here is Montana out-resourcing much of the FCS. Montana is one of the few FCS teams that can schedule home games and make a good amount of money off them. Montana has an incredibly energetic, incredibly passionate fan base that every school would, and I'm counting Montana State, every school would kill for the Grizz fan base. And they're moving slightly downward. So yeah, look, Montana's got to figure out what they're going to do offensively very quick if this team's going to make the playoffs. Because what we've seen offensively is Sam Vidlak doesn't get enough reps or enough freedom to make a few mistakes so he can actually learn from them. And this looks like a not that different version, even though Sam Vidlak is a better pure passer than Montana's had for a few years. This is a team that has enough pieces to be at the very least solid offensively in the Big Sky. And they're not. They're probably the worst team at capitalizing with offensive resources in the entire conference, which it sucks. I like Montana being very good in the Big Sky. I think it's good for the conference, but they're not. So moving on, Captain may have stepped on my lead a teeny bit. Hit the comment section again. That was a terrible look for the Big Sky. Taylor Cash says, talking about the refs, that not catch was wild. Still thought hit in the comment section there. Montana also gave up a 4th and 27. Thank you, Taylor. Capdan 58. Hauk really lighting a fire under his own seat. Well, Capdan, here's the thing. I don't know if he is, because a lot of the donor base in Montana likes Bobby Hauk. But no, you're right. If Montana had a clue, if Montana does not do well this season, they'd look at moving on from Bobby Hauk and hire Rob Orich. But I don't think they're going to. So, and from an Idaho fan angle, I certainly hope they're not smart enough to do something like that. Number six, UC Davis. UC Davis in a death match for underwhelmer of the week, too. UC Davis hosted Southern Utah of the WAC. UC Davis is a former Big Sky refugee in the WAC United Athletic Conference. And this game was tight, very tight, considering SUU now sits at 0-3. Very tight, considering UC Davis is a team with meaningful playoff aspirations. But now we've got kind of 2 weeks consecutive from Davis where it's, I mean, one was a blowout to Oregon State, FBS Oregon State. So sure, throw that one out the window. But this is another team that you would not look at their out-of-conference trajectory and say, this team is clearly putting it together week by week and getting better in different aspects. Davis wins 23-21, hosting Southern Utah. Miles Hastings, cornerback for Davis, goes 21-37, 256 yards and 2 touchdowns. Lan Larrison, as always, leads Davis on the ground, 17 rushes for 60 yards, no touchdowns. Lan Larrison, however, because Larrison's the name to pay attention to for Davis guys, at least offensively. In addition to his 17 rushes for 60 yards, 8 catches for 106 yards and 1 touchdown, including a 73-yard reception. Trent Tompkins also 5 catches for 62 yards, no touchdowns. Takeaways here. Man, this, again, it's kind of tough to gauge this. Look, heading into the fourth quarter, Davis led this game 13-7, and they end up holding on to win 23-21. Honestly, I feel a little bit speechless thinking about how this game was. Davis did lead, 23-14 with 2 minutes left in the fourth. So it wasn't, I suppose you'd say it wasn't that close, but Southern Utah is not good. We in the Big Sky, we're familiar with Southern Utah, and those dudes are away from competitive. So Davis, very underwhelming overall performance. If we look at their out-of-conference play, they're another team that are hard to gauge. They sit at 2-1. I'm going to give them, like the Grizz, they get a C- based off of 2 FCS wins. And that should mean more, but I'm really hesitant to extrapolate with Davis on this, guys, because Davis, throughout their out-of-conference play, they murder Texas A&M Commerce, an absolutely terrible dumpster fire Southland team, then get killed by Oregon State, then barely beat a not very good Southern Utah team. So we're going to have a gauge about what this means for UC Davis. But preseason, I think it would have been brain dead to pick UC Davis week one in Big Sky play over Eastern. And I don't think we're there anymore. So Davis gets a C-. And 23 points against Southern Utah. Oh man, I And honestly, like if we were to file disappointments of the out of conference, weirdly, because both the teams have two wins, UC Davis and Montana are, hey, flip a coin. Who's the most disappointing team in the Big Sky out of conference? It's one of those teams. That's it. Captain 58. Whoa, Davis sliding the wrong way, going into a tough game against the Rising Eagles. Yeah, correct. Taylor Cash. They won't end up on the road, Jason. The committee won't allow it. Talking about the Grizz for playoffs. Well, no, that now, Taylor, that's not a committee thing. The Grizz can buy home games, and that's how the FCS system works. The Grizz also don't have – it's like Idaho is going to struggle to host FCS playoff games. Well, they would have back when the Apple Cup existed last week of the season for WSU because that always ran into the first week of the FCS playoffs. That's going to be out the window now. But – Idaho would have structurally struggled because of the inability to accommodate people. Well, Montana doesn't have that competition in Missoula. They own the western half of that state, and they got the money to buy games. So until it's a different system, I don't think this is a good system. But until they have a different system, they're going to be able to buy. They're going to be able to put winning bids together for hosting playoff games. That's just not going to go away. Before we get to our next team, which we're starting to get into the more Taylor Cash, unless you're North Dakota. Correct. So next sponsor, we have to talk about Hughes River Expedition, who like they've been supporting Tubbs at the club for a long time, long time Vandal family, huge Big Sky family, Hughes River Expedition. If you're looking for a great all-inclusive week-long vacation, don't look past your backyard. Venture into the largest protected wilderness in the continental U.S., located right here in the great state of Idaho. Enjoy a multi-day trip down the Middle Fork of the Salmon, the main Salmon River, no return, the Salmon River Canyons, or the Selway, and you can even check out special trips like the one to see the Perseid meteor shower. Camp on pristine beaches, run amazing whitewater, hike scenic trails, spot wildlife, soak in beautiful natural hot springs, and take in the history along the river and fish some of the most remote stretches of river in the country. You just bring your clothes, let HRE handle the rest. So if you're into anything like a river expedition, getting out in nature, enjoying rapids, the trips are all inclusive. Get a hold of Colin. Call him now, 800-262-1882, or check him out at hughesriver.com. And now, Captain, because you were asking about it earlier, we are getting ready to talk about Eastern Washington. And this is a team that my tone's going to change. Eastern sits at 1-2 on the season, picked up for Eastern, the win this week at home over Southeastern Louisiana. It was huge. The Eagles won 40-29, looking a lot more like the Eagles of old in this game. The Eagles trailed early in a game the issue for Eastern was just driving between the 20s with no issue, essentially the entire game, but it took the Eagles a while to really click. This game was 17-14 at the half. But if we look at team stats overall, the Eagles outgained Southeastern Louisiana 530 yards to 293. So no Eastern and Sela was picked to win the Southland preseason media. So this is not, even though Sela sits at 0-3, this is not what you'd call a bad football team. And offensively, Eastern just dominated this game. Kiko Vesperis, new starting quarterback, looking pretty good, looking a little bit better every week. Goes 33 of 47 for 349 yards, 2 touchdowns and 1 pick. Michael Wortham is a guy worth knowing for Eastern. He's the backup quarterback. He does come in for rushing plays under center, but he plays all over the field. Wortham, one pass for 4 yards. The box score is not going to excite you that much. It's just he's an interesting kind of Swiss Army knife guy for Eastern. Two rushes for 9 yards. You also see him a little you see him a little bit on passing plays too, not much, but name to pay attention to. He also returns kicks for Eastern. So kind of weird to have your backup quarterback in that type of role where he's going to take hits, but he does. In the receiving room, the two main receivers pay attention to for Eastern, Efton Chisholm III, all Big Sky talent, 9 catches for 103 yards and a touchdown. But Nolan Ulm has particularly early was a frequent target of Vesperis. So again, Eastern's wide receiving room, in spite of losing all Big Sky Freddie Roberson to transfer last season, looks pretty dang good. On the ground, Eastern rushes 44 times for 177 yards, led by Justice Jackson, 12 rushes for 91 yards. Tuna Altahir was the leading rusher in terms of carries, 14 rushes for 37 yards and a touchdown. But honestly, Altahir wasn't that effective. I mean, his longest rush was 10 yards. If you remove that, he rushed 13 times for 27 yards. Justice Jackson on the ground is the name I think to pay attention to for Eastern Washington. And I think she's got to bring up defensively is Eastern again looks significantly improved, is significantly more physical than last season. CELA's they're a strong scoring team. Idaho Vandal fans saw that in the FCS playoffs last season. And the Eagles keep CELA under 30 and under 300 total yards. So very impressive outing to me overall. So grades for Eastern. And look, this is where I'm sure there's going to be people who disagree, especially in Montana, with this grading. I'm going to go C+ for Eastern Washington. Hard to go higher than a C when you only pick up one out-of-conference win. But the Eagles absolutely challenged themselves in the out-of-conference season. They started the season at North Dakota State, went down 35-10, then lost to FBS Fresno State in double overtime last week, and then picked up a win this week. There's a clear upward trajectory for Eastern, which got to bring up accidental special correspondent Kyler Neal here. One of the things he brought up for Eastern is due to wildfires in the Spokane area, which if you don't live in the Pacific Northwest, there's no reason for you to know about this. But there was significant wildfire issues just outside Spokane in that Cheney area in August. So the Eagles lost two late weeks of fall camp. So that it makes sense that this team should be looking like they're coming together more maybe than some other teams, because there's some repetitions other teams have that the Eagles don't. And if I'm an Eastern fan, what I saw week by week by week is a team that's clearly better than last year, a team that's going to score more points than last year. And defensively, Eastern, they're looking a little bit better every single week. So look, the Eagles sit at 1-2 overall. But there's a reason that they jumped up to number 5 in our power rankings voting. Like right now, if Montana and Eastern were to play, I'd pick Eastern. UC Davis is playing Eastern this week. Honestly, I don't know how you wouldn't pick Eastern thus far without looking at things like the home matchup right now. Hit the comment section. We have, real quick, Jason Mayer. Eastern might be better than Weber. Taylor Cash, tough loss against Fresno. I still don't believe in gloves for Eastern, talking about Keiko Vesperis. Well, Taylor, you only have to believe in him right now more than you believed in Gunnar Talkington, because phase one, Eastern just has to be able to put points on the board in a reasonable kind of way, and we're looking at a better team. Martin Heemstra, this week's Eastern Washington UC Davis game will be interesting. And Jason Mayer, lots of good Big Sky games this week. Jason, MVP here for a second. The big winner in out-of-conference play for Big Sky teams is Big Sky fans, because we don't have to care about FBS matchups anymore. A lot of the schools who had those sub D1 games, we don't get to care about. Now it's all Big Sky on Big Sky violence from this point on. So we're all winners here. But moving on, we got to hit the other teams. Number 4, Weber State. And Weber State, not a super confidence inspiring week. They got killed by University of Utah, which Eastern should get killed by number 12 University of Utah. 31-7 is the final score. Mostly a burn the tape kind of game. Utah's good. Weber sits at 2-1, but only 1-1 for playoff purposes. Kylan Weiser goes 11-23 for 66 yards in the pick. He wasn't going to do well against Utah anyway. Kylan Weiser still kind of has a stranglehold to me on number 12 in Big Sky starting quarterbacks, and I'm counting if we have backups come in at some other schools. Leading rusher for Weber, Damon Bankson, 8 for 59 yards. So, hey, solid outing there. I guess one big takeaway is if you don't watch Weber, it's worth knowing. We pronounce Damon Bankson's name is Damon, not Damon or Damien. But overall, I don't know, man. This game against Utah felt like vintage Weber of, look, they got 5 first downs and gained 127 total yards. My only takeaway here is that look, Utah is a strong defensive team, but even an okay FCS offense is probably going to put together more than five first downs in 60 minutes of football. So if you're one of the stories of Weber State is, hey, what does Mickey Mantle as head coach mean for this team? Offensively, they're still a work in progress for sure. Hit the comment section real quick before hitting the grade. Martin Heemster, the game of the week is Cal Poly Portland State. Okay, obviously it's a mistake of mine to stop talking about Weber for a moment. Jason Mayer, inaugural We're Close Bowl, PSU versus Cal Poly. Martin Heemster, is the GOAT still on the roster? Talking about Weber State, Jake Constantine, unfortunately, no. And that actually would be a step up quarterback-wise. And Tom Lakey, Utah had over 20 additional offensive plays. Yeah, dude, there you go, man. That's absolutely part of it. But now Weber State grading Weber State out of conference. I hate to do this. I absolutely hate to do this because look, Weber State won. They've got Abraham Williams, who is just an electric kick returner, plays cornerback as well. But Abraham Williams is the best kick returner in the conference. No question. One of the best kick returners we've ever seen in the Big Sky. But I gotta go D plus for Weber State out of conference. Marceau grades pretty tough, guys. So why does Weber State get a D plus in the out of conference? One, they only picked up one win that counts for playoffs. They scheduled a D2 game against Central Washington that I will not talk about. And then we had that FBS OOC game against Utah we just talked about. So hey, those two, burn the tape. Neither of them mean anything. What we have is Weber did beat Northern Iowa, forced five or six turnovers in that game, which Weber State won in week two. But that's our only game we can extrapolate much from the Wildcats. And look, here's the thing. Weber's going to be able to run relatively well. Banks and solid. Line looks good enough. But Weiser, I don't think, is enough at quarterback. I also think Weber has one of the least talented receiving rooms in the league. So Weber is going to be as good as they are, as they can be defensively. However good Weber is defensively, that's how good the team's going to be. And Weber is, they are strong on that side of the ball. Even with the guys lost to Jay Hill leaving, there's still talent up front and in the secondary for sure. So look, Weber's going to make teams pay for mistakes. That baseline level of talent is not gone. Weber looks bigger up front, honestly, than last season. That absolutely is going to matter against teams. So you can imagine Weber State against a team like Montana. Montana should be terrified of Weber State based off of defensive prowess that is still present to the extent it is with a new coach. But there's some chinks in the armor. I'd put Weber State as a team that looks like fringe to early playoffs so far is the ceiling. This is again not a bad football team at all. It's just I think they're going to take a small step back defensively. Mainly, they lost a gigantic amount of talent leaving with Jay Hill in the secondary, and I just don't think Weiser's going to give them enough. I think Weiser's probably, honestly, Weber has not been quarterback you in the last handful of years. And I don't think Weiser's going to be able to stretch the field enough. I think teams are going to gang up on the run against Weber and say, hey, Weiser and some of the less talented receivers relative to top schools in the Big Sky, you got to beat us. And I don't think Weber's going to be able to do that enough. I think that they're going to have to keep getting points in the special teams. And I think some teams are going to get smart enough to do everything they can to make sure that Abraham Williams does not get the return kicks. Comment section, Tom Lakey, as a Weber fan, that's a fair grade. We will know a lot more in the next few games. Thank you, Tom. And you're right. Look, Weber's not different from a lot of teams where we only have like one game we can even extrapolate anything from. So there you go. Jason Mayer, I'm an EAG convert, Eastern Washington over Weber. I voted Eastern over Weber too. Now we're going to hit our top three. Before we hit our top three, we have to hear, and hey, if you're not a Vandal, you're going to just live with this for a second. We got to talk about Tap the Keg, which is October 13th, the night before Idaho's homecoming on October 14th against University of Montana. Look, Tap the Keg is University of Idaho's version of Oktoberfest or Brewfest, whatever you want to call it. It's at 7:30 p.m. that Friday. It's from 3:30 to 7:30 p.m. that Friday before homecoming at the Dan O'Brien Track and Field Complex just outside the Kibbe. You're going to have a ton of local and regional beers, ciders, and seltzers. All those are going to be available to taste. Oktoberfest-inspired food vendors and live music. Early pricing ends September 25th. You don't want to miss this. And if you're going to be there for homecoming, you have to go to Tap the Keg. It was a great event last year, and it's going to be better this year. Purchase tickets at go.uidaho.edu/tap the keg. Number three. And look, getting the number three differentiated is, it's tough because they're all winners, theoretically speaking. Idaho comes in at number three. Idaho did not beat Cal, went down 31-17, but I'm calling Idaho a winner this week. The Vandals, for a while, were abusing Cal, led 17-0 in the second quarter. Issue for Idaho is it was really just depth. That's what happened with Cal, is Idaho ran out of depth. Few judgment calls from the coaching staff, going on fourth down three separate times and failing on three huge conversions, one of which when Idaho led 17-7 and then broken coverage led to a touchdown just a few plays later for Cal. The Bears scored 31 unanswered after Idaho opened with 17 unanswered. But the takeaway from Vandals for me is Idaho was not outclassed in this game whatsoever. Idaho looked like they belonged, at least the first string for Idaho, for sure, looked like they belonged in this game. The team just, they eventually got beat up. And that's part of why beating some of these Pac-12 teams is tough for FCS teams. Hitting the box score for Idaho. We had Giovanni McCoy led the Vandals through the air with 279 yards. Threw it far more than is typical for a Jason Eck team. McCoy on the game goes 28 of 46, did throw one pick. Anthony Woods led Idaho on the ground, 11 rushes for 56 yards and one touchdown, a pretty damn impressive touchdown, saving a broken trick play. And in the receiving room, Hayden Hatton, 8 catches for 80 yards. Terrez Trainor, 6 catches for 71 yards. Jermaine Jackson, 6 catches for 62 yards. I bring up those three receivers because Idaho, all three of those dudes are former All Big Sky receivers within the last couple of years. Last season, Hayden Hatton and Jermaine Jackson were first teamers, and Hayden Hatton was preseason Big Sky Offensive Player of the Year. The issue Idaho ran into when I'm talking about depth is really the Vandals started to get beat up on the ground against Cal. The Vandals only surrendered 114 passing yards on 25 attempts, two of which were touchdowns. And one of them, the touchdown play with the broken pass, was a huge chunk of that yardage. So you subtract that, and Idaho was pretty damn effective stopping Cal through the air. But on the ground, former Big Sky, All Big Sky running back Isaiah Afonso, who was in the number one role for Cal due to injury of their top running back. Isaiah Afonso is healthy, and Big Sky guys know that dude's good. Cal ran 43 times for 256 yards against Idaho. So no, Idaho just wore out. That's it. No reason. This is not a burn the tape game for Idaho, like it was to me for Weber State. Idaho certainly had some generalizable stuff. In particular, I feel that Idaho's offensive line is looking a little bit better each week. They're not going to be the best in the Big Sky by any means, but offensive line looks like it's getting a little better. Defensively, Idaho looks sound on both sides of the ball, at least in the first string, and certainly extrapolating against Big Sky teams. And you know this Idaho team is going to be able to score against Big Sky teams. No question. Honestly, this game, you got to see some of the versatility. Usually Jason Eck likes to rush a bit more than his team passes. But against Cal, we actually saw Idaho spread the ball out and through the air quite a bit. And to me, that offense, if they decide to go pass heavy against Big Sky teams, there's going to be no secondary that's going to be able to get to stop Idaho. So out of conference grade for Idaho. On the show last night, I said A, but you know, I'm going to have to go with Taylor Cash. A- for Idaho on out of conference. Look, they picked up two wins for the playoffs, beating Lamar, who's terrible, and then Nevada, FBS Nevada. So they go 2-1. Both those count for playoffs. And Idaho looked very good against Cal. So I'll go A-. That if we didn't have the Sac State game to talk about, this would have been an A. But Idaho gets an A-. Very, very good outing. We learned, I think, quite a bit about this Idaho team in those three matchups. And look, Idaho, depending on the poll you use, is a top five FCS team. That's earned. That's not legacy. This Idaho team looks good on both sides of the ball. The only question you really have for Idaho is how high is their overall ceiling relative to teams like Montana State, South Dakota State, meaning playoffs. But we get to find out a little bit of that for Idaho right when we start conference season, which we'll talk about those games just for a moment at the end. Comment section, Idaho will take the number two spot after a win over Sac State. Theme for Jason is stepping on my toes about topics we're going to hit later. So thank you, Jason. Taylor Cash, I'd argue that bumps us to Idaho 2-1. Martin Heemstra, only the two spot. Jason, they'd jump to one probably. Crewhead 76, fair assessment on Idaho. I'd say B+. Crewhead 76, got to stop the run and run the ball better. Crewhead, you're right. But I think the line's getting better. You know, the Idaho averaged better yards per carry this game against Cal than against Lamar or against Nevada. So things are coming together, I think. Which means we got to talk about the number two team. And look, if Idaho is a top five team in the nation, but a number three team in our power poll, it means the Big Sky's got some pretty damn good football teams. Our number two team. It's hard to actually put Sacramento State at number two. I understand why they landed at two. The show isn't about really dissecting pole position. But look, Sacramento State is 3-0. They had the marquee win of the Big Sky out-of-conference slate last night, beating Stanford, FBS Stanford. The Stanford that former head coach Troy Taylor left Sacramento State for. Sacramento State, in a game that was just, it was nail biter all the way through. Sac State wins 30-23. Huge, huge win. They take home almost $700,000 for the game, and they take home the win. Caden Bennett's a starter. There was a one-game quarterback competition. Caden Bennett won it for Sac State immediately. Goes 21-33 for 279 yards, one touchdown, two picks. Bennett also on the ground led the Hornets rushing 13 rushes for 100 yards and a touchdown. Marcus Fulcher was the leading rusher as a running back, 13 rushes for 46 yards. Good news for Sacramento State is All-American tight end Marshall Martin's back on the field, four catches for 17 yards. You know, against Big Sky teams, those numbers look better. Number one receiver again for Sac State looks like Devin Gandy, five catches for 64 yards. On team stats, you could not watch this game and take anything away other than the fact that Sacramento State and Stanford are very close as far as overall teams. If you rotated Sacramento State into the Pac-12, wouldn't be shocked if their overall record would look pretty damn similar to whatever Stanford's going to have this season. Sacramento State outgains the Cardinal 448 yards to 387. And look, this isn't a game where you'd say turnovers undid Stanford, because both teams threw two picks and those were the entirety of the turnovers. Your time of possession was virtually identical, 31 minutes for Sac State to 29 minutes for Stanford. Not a big difference there. Penalties were pretty dang close, 5 for 50 yards for Sacramento State, 6 for 65 for Stanford. So look, you look at all these metrics being pretty close and a close game score. No, dude, these teams are just relatively similar. And relative to Sac State having first-year head coach Andy Thompson after losing one of the best coaches in modern history in the Big Sky Conference and Troy Taylor, no, out-of-conference grade's an A. They're 3-0. Every single one of these games counts for the playoffs. No, you don't have an out-of-conference season that goes better than what Sacramento State had. Go through their games very quick. Yes, they beat up on two atrocious Southland teams, Nicholls and Texas A&M Commerce, and looked not quite as dominating in either of those games as they should have, but neither of those games against Texas A&M Commerce or Nicholls were really in doubt in any meaningful way. And then Sacramento State picks up this win. I got to say, I think this is a team that is like Eastern, maybe not to the extent as Eastern. They're getting better. So, no, Sacramento State, now I'm honestly with Taylor Cash. I don't know how a team can be 3-0 with a Pac-12 win and not be number one in the poll, but whatever. I'm not the only voter. Jason Mayer in the comment section, and they beat their coach who left. Yep. Crewhead 76. Cal will beat Stanford. Crewhead, you're right. So hey there, you're right. There's always only so much we can take away from every single win. Not every win is created equal, and that includes FBS wins. Just like, you know, some people would say with Idaho, look, Nevada was a huge win for Idaho, but Nevada would not win the Big Sky. Hey, fair to say, but it doesn't matter. That was a huge win for Idaho. This is a gigantic win for Stanford. And the Hornets look good, man. I mean, through 12 quarters of football, Sacramento State has, you know, they're giving up on average fewer than 20 points per game. Even against a Pac-12 team, they gave up 23 total. That's a pretty strong effort. Honestly, what you might say is slightly confusing is you'd expect a couple of the games so far that Sacramento State would have broken through the 40-point barrier. But I think the team's coming together. I think Caden Bennett is going to be a solid quarterback. I think he'll probably be, about mid-level in the Big Sky. You know, he might be one of the top five, but he's certainly not top three. I think somewhere in that like 8 to 6 range is about where Bennett's going to be right now. But he's a good enough passer and a solid enough runner. He put those things together. He's a weapon that a lot of Big Sky schools are going to struggle with. So moving on, Taylor Cash saying, hey, Nevada looked good against Kansas, so who knows? Yes, Taylor, you're right. But Nevada certainly did not look good against Idaho, which is why I'm fine extrapolating from that game for Idaho. Number one, Montana State still holds on to number one. Montana State sits at 2-1 overall. This week, Montana State had no difficulty whatsoever beating Stetson. Stetson, who they're an FCS team, is 57-20. Not close whatsoever. Bobcats hosted that game in Bozeman. And like, this was a blowout from the start. It was 21-0 at the end of the first quarter, 41-6 at the end of the first half. Only thing confusing at all is that Montana did throw the ball a little bit, 30 passes to 36 rushes through the air. Sean Chambers started. Tommy Malott did not play due to injury the week before against South Dakota State. Chambers goes 9-13 for 140 yards. Also rushed 5 times for 55 yards and 2 touchdowns. Scotter Humphrey led Montana State with 3 touchdowns on the ground, 7 rushes, 53 yards. But the rush load was pretty split amongst a few guys, which you'd expect. A team like Stetson cannot compete with the Montana O-line. So whoever gets the ball is going to have a good-looking box score. That's it. Montana State also did pick off 2 passes. Again, look, this just was not a close game whatsoever. Montana State forced those 2 turnovers. The Bobcats did lose 1 fumble, but look at Montana State outgained Stetson 618 to 280 yards total. So this was a bloodbath, and this could have been worse relative to how the second half played out. But Montana State, look, they sit at 2-1. I'm gonna give them an A- for their out of conference play. Look at Montana State and Idaho. I think they had very similar out of conference slates in. Actually, no. I'm gonna say B plus for Montana State. They need to be slightly below Idaho with their grade. Montana State picked up 2 wins against very bad FCS teams, and then pushed the number one FCS team in the nation on the road to the brink. Not a bad showing whatsoever for Montana State. The takeaways are, look, the Cats are inventive offensively. They're not going to beat a lot of teams through the air, but they pass just enough to keep you honest. It's more intriguing that once Tommy Malott is back, that the Cats do play both Chambers and Malott at the same time. But Montana State they're kind of the inverse of Idaho, in that Idaho's stacked receiving room is right now inhibiting any receiver from standing out above the rest that much stat-wise. Hayden Hatton is of course the best, but it's hard to get, you know, 125 yards in a game when there's other dudes who are all Big Sky getting catches. Montana State's like, they're kind of like that with running, but it's because of their line. They have talented rushers for sure, but Brent Vegan built off of what Jeff Choate had, and Montana State's taken another step to a different level under Brent Vegan. This team is pretty damn tough. So I think, look, number one is fair-ish for Montana State. I don't think they had the most impressive out of conference. And I think if we're truly looking at just body of evidence, you'd have to go Sacramento State at number one. But whatever, all top three teams, Idaho, Sacramento State, and Montana State, 3-2-1, they all have a case to be considered the top team in the conference. The big takeaway is all three of those teams are thinking playoffs starting week one of the conference season. All three of those teams are thinking we need to be seeded once we get to playoffs. So look, hitting the matchups for this week, and as it has been referenced already by Jason, my man, Idaho, I think, has the game of the week hosting Sacramento State, which immediately that game has playoff implications. But we also have Cal Poly at Portland State, which there'll be some points scored. That's think of that as the dumpster fire tournament round one matchup, Cal Poly at Portland State. Montana gets to host travels to Northern Arizona. It'll be curious if Montana can be a little bit more like the team that beat Utah Tech by 40. And interesting to see if they can eclipse 200 total yards of offense. Don't hold your breath. We have another awful team tournament game, round one, Northern Colorado hosting Idaho State. And the intrigue there is Northern Colorado can't score and Idaho State can't defend. One of those is going to break, guys. One of those has to, or Idaho State can just score a ton. Montana State travels to Weber State, which that's another game playoff implications. And then Eastern Washington travels to UC Davis. So if I'm looking at marquee games, Idaho Sac State is easily number one, but guys, we also got Montana State, Weber, and Eastern UC Davis are huge matchups too. So ton to pay attention to in the Big Sky Conference. We're all winners because we don't have to talk about garbage games anymore. So thanks everyone for tuning in. Support Tubbs at the Club at patreon.com/tubbsattheclub to join our only Tubbs Discord. It's the best online chat during Vandal games that exists. It's not remotely close. Hit the hammer subscribe for us too. Tubbs is getting closer and closer and closer to 500 subscribers, which means closer to 1,000. We get to 1,000 subscribers, YouTube has to pay us. So even if you're not a Vandal fan, help us out there. Cost you nothing. Just turn off notifications if you don't want them. Otherwise, guys, thanks for coming. As always, kick ass to have the show when I could. It's going to be back on to later in the evening, probably next week. But with that, we're going to allow, if I can ever find Martin's videos in the background, we're going to let the best band in all the land play us out. The Sound of Idaho. Go Vandals.